As a non-commercial educational radio station, KZSC supports the free expression of ideas. Please be aware that the opinions expressed are those of the speakers or artists only, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the UC Regents, KZSC staff, management, or underwriters. We welcome your feedback on our programming. Please direct your comments to the Program Review Committee at 831-459-4726 or by email at prc@kzsc.org. Welcome to the Pandemoscene podcast. Today we are sharing a conversation with Professor Sharon Daniel, whose work has dramatically shifted in response to the pandemic. Sharon Daniel is a professor of film and digital media at UCSC. In addition to teaching at the university, Daniel also does research on various social justice issues in order to create interactive websites and other media projects for the general public. Her current work focuses on the criminal justice system and Indigenous communities in Alaska. She strives to give a platform to those historically marginalized. Daniel talks to us about what incarceration looks like right now and shares details on her upcoming projects documenting COVID-19 in prisons and jails around the country.
Could you tell us a little bit about your COVID-19 related projects, if you have any new ones that weren't like listed on your website, or how your projects that you were working on before the lockdown shifted to like better encapsulate the world of the pandemic and also the like world that is pushing towards racial justice in a way that we haven't really seen in recent years?
When the pandemic hit, I was on leave I'd been on sabbatical for 2 quarters, and I was in the UK on an artist residency I was actually working on in the fourth world, trying to bring it to kind of a conclusion, developing an interface and editing the hours and hours of interview material that I have for that project. I came back a week or so early because of anticipated flight restrictions and that sort of thing. And I was trying to continue working on In the Fourth World, but I was obsessed with the problem of COVID in prisons and jails. So, you know, I've had a long, very, very long term, probably over 20-year commitment now in my research to working on carceral issues and, the critiques of the criminal punishment system. And that has included police violence, but has mostly been focused on working on issues of mass incarceration. And so I was kind of obsessively scouring the news for news of what I knew was going to happen in the prison and jail system, which, as everyone knows, is just a petri dish for the spread of infection, a space where social distancing measures are impossible to realize, and also where medical care is historically and currently terrible. And I was frustrated because my practice is interview based, and when I've worked on projects about prison issues, I've done it through interviews with prisoners. And of course, the first thing that all the prison systems did was shut down visitation. And since I was in the mode of trying to work on In the Fourth World, which maybe I should explain just where the recording is, a project that I've embarked on with a Native Alaskan village above the Arctic Circle, and doesn't really deal with criminal justice or carceral issues at all, but deals more with their potential vulnerability to climate change, and also the history of their kind of experience of colonial oppression and environmental racism. But anyway, so I couldn't stop being focused on and concerned about the situation in prisons and jails, and I couldn't figure out a way to get in to do interviews. But I was spending half my day or more just looking for reporting on what was happening with COVID in prisons and jails. And I decided I would do a project that I would use that research that I was doing sort of out of an impulse anyway, to create a timeline to sort of record the spread of the COVID virus within prisons and jails over time from the perspective of prisoners and prisoners' family members and their attorneys and activists and so forth. So rather than the formal kind of, you know, Bureau of Prisons or CDCR kind of reporting on cases and what they were doing about them, which, you know, at the time when I started working on this, they were doing nothing and they were reporting nothing. But there are a lot of publications like the Marshall Project and The Appeal that are, you know, activist kind of legally based journalistic outlets that focus on criminal justice issues. And I was getting a lot of information from those kinds of publications. So anyway, I started basically scraping in a kind of manual way, not with an algorithm, but with myself. And I had a little bit of funding to support a graduate student who, in our social documentation program, who had been fired for withholding grades in the strike. So he needed support, and I had this little bit of support. So I hired him to help me with the scraping, you know, with the research part of it, which had already become kind of an overwhelming, like, a lot of work. And so then I was working with, also at the same time, on In the Fourth World, with the designer, developer, programmer that I worked with on Public Secrets, which was the first project I did with incarcerated women from California, Central California Women's Facility. Anyway, so we were in regular contact because he's helping develop the interface for In the Fourth World. And I started telling him about what I wanted to do with this information about COVID in prisons and jails. And I don't want to get into too much technical detail because it won't be interesting, but basically the interface we're developing for In the Fourth World sort of sits on the foundation of a platform that Eric had been building, you know, prior to my working with this particular environment that he had built. And I wanted to use that platform to build this new project about COVID. And he said, well, you know, I can help you with it. And then it just got bigger and it took over all of our time. And now I'm spending like almost 24 hours a day on it. Not really, but a big, huge chunk of time a day on it. We sort of turned our attention away temporarily from In the Fourth World in terms of Eric's time that he was spending on that and my time that I was spending on that, and have built this project, which is called Exposed, which we're planning to launch publicly. It might be a soft launch on August 28th. But if you guys want to look at it, if you promise, you know, not to spread it too widely, I'll give you the URL, which is unjustlyexposed.com. So unjustly exposed is all one word, and then .com. And it will have, if you log on, it's got a very simple splash page now, just kind of explaining what it is and that it's a work in progress. But what it basically does is it draws from a spreadsheet that we've been building in Google Sheets with all of these quotes and statistics and, in some cases, audio files, you know, clips from interviews that I've found online. And in a couple of cases, my own interviews with people over the phone that, you know, just... express people's experience of COVID in prisons and jails, or with their family members, or their clients. And, you know, it's on this timeline. I don't know if you're looking at it now, but you can just click around, or you can go in order on the timeline. And, you know, it's, I really think of it as, you know, a way to link people to the source of the content. So at that bar at the top is the metadata that tells you who's speaking and, you know, where I found the source of those statements, and hopefully will drive people to the context for the quotes and, you know, allow them to understand, you know, and this is just US, but it's everything I can gather from the US, and the intention is to keep it going until the crisis is over, which of course is, when I first started, I assumed would be, you know, a couple of months.
Transformation Highway is an interview and talk-based program exploring spirituality, social change, art, music, and local politics. Tune in every Thursday afternoon from 12 to 1 p.m. only on the Great 88 KZSC Santa Cruz. The Santa Cruz Resource Center for Nonviolence is hosting 5 book circles discussing key works on anti-racism, as well as histories of Black and Indigenous people of color in the Americas. The book circles will begin at the end of September. Meeting dates and registration information are available at rcnv.org.
What made you focus on what you're focusing on now?
This situation is so critical, and I think it's really important. You know, even though there's a lot of reporting that is happening, especially right now in our area with what happened at San Quentin, you know, really tragic, like extremely large outbreak. Those kinds of outbreaks are also happening in several other locations in the U.S., and I think that's going to continue. And I just felt like I had to do something. And I think maybe this is kind of the impulse behind the project that y'all are doing with these interviews and the sort of focus on the Pandemoscene, is that at this moment, you know, it's hard to not prioritize engaging in the vulnerabilities that this situation is exposing, vulnerabilities and problems and injustices that have always been there, but that are being exacerbated in different ways by the pandemic. And then there, you know, I've also tried to focus on the racial injustice aspect of that within this project, as well as in some updating of some other work that I've been doing on the side. As it were.
Yeah, so that leads us into our next question, which is about really the response to the killing of both George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, and the like hundreds of Black and brown people who have been killed by the police. Like, what would you say, how would you describe this moment from like where you're, I guess reporting obviously isn't the right word, but from where you're documenting this, like how does this affect the work you're doing and the work you're seeing?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely does affect the work I'm doing in terms of maybe not directly in relation to this to Exposed, though, you know, there have been conversations that weave the two issues together, you know, the overall issue of the, you know, criminalization and over-policing of people of color, the ways in which that, like, you know, creates this context where there's a disproportionate impact on people of color who are incarcerated, looking just at death row on in San Quentin, you know, you see the impact of that. Though most of the death row prisoners that have died during the COVID have been white men, the disproportionate number of Black men on death row is something that's really, really significant.
How are you thinking about the moment? So we have the pandemic and then also the uprisings against police brutality and systemic racism. And we're now in August already of 2020. What are you seeing as the specific challenges of all of this together from your perspective as an artist who does, you know, politically relevant art?
That's really such a difficult and big question. But I think it's an important question. And I think it's something that we need to be thinking about. I feel like, you know, as an artist, you know, there are different ways of showing up, right? So I was very challenged and torn by, with the question of how to participate in the, you know, in the kind of uprising that's happened since George Floyd. And I had been looking at these, you know, these videos of police killings for years now, and trying to imagine how to engage in a productive way, you know, how to sort of turn the gaze onto the problem instead of the kind of spectacularization of the problem, the kind of spectacle of Black death at the hands of white police. And I really, like, I've written a couple of papers. I've done like 5 or 6 video works about it that I've basically thrown out because I didn't know how to deal with it in kind of representational form. I wanted to go to protests. I was in the middle of, you know, Zoom teaching, doing synchronous Zoom teaching of my undergraduate class in the spring. And I went to one protest, but I was so anxious about the virus. I was just miserable. It wasn't a socially distanced protest, but anyway. I think there are a lot of different ways of showing up and trying to participate in movements for change on multiple different levels. So I think that the problem is, you know, sustaining activity and also sort of creating productive kind of understanding, like, detailed. For me, it's like being a documentarian is about getting people to see the scope of something in detail, which is why I do the kind of the form of work that I do, as opposed to making films that are more about one character and a particular situation. I do work that's about, you know, a collective experience in all of its particularities. And I think it's necessary consciousness to be educated in the subtleties and details of the problems and their interconnectedness. And so I feel like, well, that's what I can do beyond just, you know, also being like a citizen and voting and writing to the governor and, you know, all of the other kinds of activities that we all can do, and going to protests and being anxious. And yeah, I don't know. I don't really have a solution that I can offer. But I do think that, you know, on every level, the kind of coincidence, I don't mean coincidence in the typical way, but coinciding of, you know, the pandemic with the renewed attention and the more pervasive attention to racist police violence has created an opportunity that just needs to be sustained. The sustaining of it, I think, is really what I worry about. But I also worry about the ways in which we all have to rethink our practices. Like, I've had to rethink my practice to do exposed. I don't necessarily want this method to always be the method that I have to use in order to make work. I think we're very at the beginning of having to figure out what the impact of a kind of what seems to be a kind of permanent pandemic virus is going to do to our world.
Going off what you just said, kind of about rethinking the way you personally had to do your work, can you talk a little bit about, like, being an artist at this time when so many of, like, the traditional spaces where art would be viewed or consumed have been, like, closed, or, like, museum doors haven't been opened in months, and I'm a theater artist, and obviously that's not happening, and things like that. So you just want to talk about that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we're all kind of dealing with what I think of as sort of a low grade, like, the political problems are much more important. The existential problems are much more important, but there are existential problems within our fields, right? And so for theater artists, I think it's even much more complex than for visual artists. And for me, since probably, you know, 80% of the work I do is work that is designed to be online, it's not as challenging for me. But I've had a few, you know, disappointments, like this large exhibition where some of the pieces from Undoing Time was supposed to happen in New York in April, and that didn't happen, and it's postponed to this coming April, but we don't really know if that will happen. And there's another exhibition that's supposed to happen, well, the same exhibition but in slightly different configurations, at the San Jose Museum in the fall, you know, and those things are definitely up in the air. So, you know, and also the things that we participate in as academics are hard to do as well, like conferences and, you know, just engaging socially as in an intellectual way has become harder. I feel kind of lucky that I have already been very much a digital media maker, because I feel like I can just continue to do that. But it's harder for me that I can't do field work in the way that I typically would and want to, because the thing I enjoy most about the work that I do is my relationships and interactions with the people that I interview. So I've learned something, though. I've been a real purist about doing prison interviews, because when I first started, I was able to go into CCWF as a legal advocate so that I could record conversations that were monitored by the prison system. And then I went into San Quentin for a couple of months, also with a lawyer who would take me in as her associate. And it's been really hard to replicate that experience, because, like, I had to pay the lawyer to do the visits. She wasn't doing the visits. I wanted to do the visits. So I paid the lawyer, not what you'd normally pay a lawyer, but still, to go in. And then for years, I've been trying to get another situation like that so that I could get back in. And I fairly recently realized, even before the pandemic, but it's certainly been affirmed by this experience, that there are lots of other ways that I can engage with people inside if I can't get in on legal visits. And, you know, I'm not going to be I'm not going to be waiting anymore for to construct a more, you know, kind of pure kind of situation. I've always been really concerned about the risk to prisoners for making statements that critique prison. And that's why I've wanted to keep this within the boundaries of the legal visitation and legal mail and that sort of thing. But it's clear to me that prisoners are less concerned about that. And those who want to speak out are willing to take the risks and want to have a conduit for that. So, and also they're adults and they can manage their, you know, they know their situation. So, so that's been interesting.
More and more and more and more mainstream people are starting to question the purpose of just locking people away, even if it's been questioned by some people in the US for hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm.
I think especially with COVID-19, people are really starting to say, why are all of these people needing to be in here?
Yeah, yeah. And the more stories that we can tell in detail, I think is what's really important. And like I said this already, but you know, when I started interviewing people at CCWF for Public Secrets, I realized that all these stories are the same, but they're all very, very unique and particular at the same time. And different types of injustices, different narratives will trigger, that will activate the imaginations and the thinking of different people.
Mm.
So, you know, some people will be really shocked to learn of particular types of injustices where other types of injustices won't necessarily trigger their hearts and minds. So I think it's important, like, to tell all the different types of stories of the way people are, why people are incarcerated, why they're in jails, why they're at risk, because so much of it is so unnecessary and egregiously unjust.
Professor Daniel has inspired us to think about the roles of art and artistic practice during the COVID-19 pandemic. How can art help the public understand the interconnectedness between massive issues, including the pandemic, the uprisings around racial injustice in the United States and worldwide, and climate change? How can artists show up in an ethical and productive way to engage these issues? And how can artists adequately give voice to the people suffering their worst effects, such as those in prisons and jails where the coronavirus is running rampant? What new stories are out there that need to be told? And how can artists and others activate people's imaginations to become more engaged with racial, gender, and economic justice? We also invite you to check out Dr. Daniel's new project, Unjustly Exposed, an interactive documentary on how COVID-19 has played out in our carceral system. You can check that out at www.unjustlyexposed.com. And with that, we would like to thank you for tuning in. Tune back in next week for another angle on the COVID-19 pandemic from the Pandemocene podcast. Thank you.